Welcome to the Food and Farming Podcast from AHDB, keeping levypayers informed and at the heart of the conversation.
Hi, I'm John Bates and welcome to this latest episode. Cricketers know 50 not out is a score to be proud of, and that number can also be pretty important birthday too. It may have escaped your attention, but this year, RB209 is celebrating the 50th anniversary of its first publication. The reference document is used by many levy payers when making decisions about balancing soil health and nutrient management to help get the best from their crops. So how has RB209 managed to stand the test of time? Well, for me, the best people to answer that question are the man responsible for the first edition, back in the day, a farmer who uses the guide religiously, and the soil health and crop nutritionist behind the listings. And we'll start there. I'll start with Dr. Amanda Bennett. Hi, Amanda. Welcome to the podcast. You're the senior environment manager at AHDB who does the heavy lifting, getting each edition ready for publication. So, Amanda, what exactly is RB209?
Hi, John. I'm sure we'll get on to the origins of the RB in RB209, but essentially it is a reference book that provides fundamental information about crop nutrition and nutrient management. So it covers a whole range of materials. It talks about the nutrient requirements for different crops, the use of organic materials such as farmyard manures and slurries, which obviously contain a range of nutrients that crops need. And also helps balance the benefits of applying mineral fertilizers, their use against the costs of the application.
So is it still relevant? Should we care?
Absolutely, yes. Very important that farmers are growing crops in an economically optimum way. You don't want to be putting on too little fertilizer or nutrient, which then doesn't meet the crop need. But equally, you don't want to be putting on too much that then could potentially cause environmental pollution in terms of the loss of those nutrients to watercourses. So in terms of balancing that economic optimum, as well as being mindful of the environmental outcomes from that. But just to note, John, that RB209 is not a regulatory document. So we do signpost to relevant regulations, particularly around the use of organic materials. But really, it is a reference book that people can use to understand optimum nutrient management.
So I said you do the heavy lifting. How is the guidance updated?
I think it's really important to understand this is quite a rigorous process, and it is based on independent evidence. We do have a formal governance structure around the updates to RB209. So when AHDB took on the production of RB209 back in 2015, we also set up the UK Partnership for Crop Nutrient Management. And this is the sort of governance structure that oversees the production and the updates to the guidance. We have three different technical working groups, which cover different sectors, such as the arable and livestock. And we also have a steering group that sort of sits over the top of it. So in terms of a typical cycle for updating the guidance, obviously it's used on farm to inform nutrient management plans, but we do get feedback. And sometimes gaps are identified or this information comes forward that we need more updates on particular nutrients or the use of those nutrients. So from that, new research might be commissioned. And that often is done in partnership with AHDB, levy funding, but also in partnership with other stakeholders in industry. The importance of the research is that it's done over many years and at different sites to take into account that in-season variation. And then the data that comes from those trials, often replicated trials, or should be replicated trials, the researchers will analyze that data and then put forward any updates that come out of it. Now, it might be that the research is done and there is no further recommendations to be made. But if there are updates to the existing guidance, these are then proposed to those technical working groups. So they're very sector specific in terms of what they look at and the crops that they cover or the use of different organic materials, for example. And members of those working groups will look at the data and will decide whether the proposals are fit and suitable to be updated into this industry accepted guidance. And from there, they make recommendations to the steering group, and the steering group will sign off and sort of approve those changes. And from there, AHDB is then given the green light to make those changes to the document itself and go through updating the publication and also the information that goes out online. So it is quite a long process to get that through the whole cycle, but really important to make sure that we have robust evidence, independent evidence to provide that guidance.
So that sounds really thorough, Amanda. Thank you for that explanation. Who's the guide targeted at? Who uses the guide?
Oh, well, it's very widely recognized across industry. Even when AHDB took it on and renamed it as the Nutrient Management Guide, the RB209 is very well established, by using across industry, by farmers, by FACTS qualified advisors and agronomists. So I just should explain what FACTS means. It refers to the Fertilizer Advisors Certification and Training Scheme. It's a professional industry qualification, and it really is very important that anybody who is giving nutrient management advice has that that qualification. So it's used by that audience to provide that information on farm. But we also have, and not many people are perhaps aware of this, a digital version of RB209, an API, which is also used by agronomists and advisors as part of their nutrient management software and their services that they provide. And again, this is really important to have that standardization across industry about what information is being called on as the core information that is contained in that guide.
I want to take the opportunity just to find out a little bit about the history behind the guide, so how we got to where we are. So let's bring in Dr. Ian Richards now. Hi, Ian. Tell us just a little bit about who you are and your role in RB209. Give us the history, if you would.
All right, thanks, John. Well, you mentioned at the beginning I was responsible for RB209. I wasn't, of course. At the time, this is going back 50 years, I was just a junior, very junior researcher at Fison's Grassland Research Unit in Devon. And the new document, RB209, was developed by a series of committees, government people, commercial research organisation people, and so on and so forth. There were a lot of these committees, and I was on one of the grassland ones. So I was a very pretty junior person, but I think I'm probably the only surviving member of that group of people.
Take the honour, Ian, take the honour.
I really was a very junior person. The first edition was a very different animal to the thing we've got now. It was a different world then. We're just at the end of the period after the war when farmers were being encouraged to use more manufactured fertilizers to increase production. And the first edition of RB209 was very much a list of recommendations for the use of manufactured fertilizers. That was it, really. It wasn't what we would now call a nutrient management guide at all. It was literally a set of fertilizer recommendations. For instance, the coverage of organic manures, I don't have the first edition, but I have a copy of the second edition from 79. And the total coverage on organic manures was 7 lines of text and 1 table with 16 numbers in it. And that was it. And the only reference I can find to environmental issues was a statement that if organic manures had been applied in the autumn, there was no need to adjust nitrogen fertilizer in the spring because all the nitrogen in the manures had been lost by leaching over winter. That was it, nothing else. So the first edition, the second edition looked like that. The first one was exactly the same, only it was green. Small 90-page document. RB209 now is a set of documents like that. I mean, the wealth of information in RB209 has increased enormously over that period of time. I think what's happened is that RB209 has evolved, as I say, from a set of tables into a true nutrient management guide.
And has the publication developed as you had hoped?
Yeah, very much so. I think that it's exactly the right way it's gone. The need to integrate organic manures with fertilizers is obvious to everybody now. It perhaps wasn't then. It wasn't until I think the sixth edition in 1994 that organic manures had their own section. before that, it was just a side issue. Environmental issues came in really with about the 7th or 8th edition. So it's gone in exactly the right direction. We're now talking about efficient use of nutrients rather than increasing use of fertilizers. And I believe that's a really good thing.
Now, it's moved online, so there are some hard copies, as you've spoken about, and we've actually got a set next to us here. Extraordinarily, there were 32,000 downloads from the website. Does that surprise you?
No, 32,000 is a lot. I mean, there are 4,000 fax advisors around the country. All of those will have a copy. And there are around 200, 250 advisors joining that scheme every year. So there's a good chunk there. And then farmers, among farmers, there's an increasing interest. In fact, a lot of fax advisors now are themselves farmers. And there's an increasing interest in the use of RB209 there. And I think RB209 has become very much an industry standard. Everybody wants one. Everybody uses one. They're used in training. They're used in looking at environmental issues, as well as just deciding on how much fertilizer to use. So there's a wide interest. And 32,000, yes, if you take the number of farmers and advisors in the country, that's about right, I should think.
I think it's a remarkable legacy that you and the team that were responsible right at the beginning, you should be very proud of it. Thank you very much indeed, Ian. I'm John Bates, and you're listening to the Food and Farming Podcast from AHDB. We're celebrating 50 years of the Nutrient Management Guide RB209 and trying to answer the question, how has it managed to stand the test of time? I think it's time we hear about it being used in the field, which is why we recently sent our reporter, Beatrice Walters, to track down a farmer who uses the Nutrient Management Guide on a regular basis.
I've come down to the gorgeous Oxfordshire countryside to meet someone who's never without their copy of RB209.
Morning, my name's James Price. I'm an arable farmer in Oxfordshire. It is the something of September. I can't remember what the date is today. 6th of September, there you go. We are still battling on with harvest. It's been, I think it's fair to say, for all farmers this summer, particularly tricky. We've just got a little bit of spring barley and spring oats left to cut. It was planted late and it hasn't done very well. So, yeah, we're tidying that up and then praying for a bit of rain for the rape to grow as well.
So, James, why is good nutrient management so important?
It's the fundamental grounding to our business. If you go back to the Green Revolution in the 1970s, where all of a sudden yields massively improved, it's all about nutrition. At the same time, we've gone through a period of period of change in the industry where our historic nutrition in the soils has run down. So we've got an opportunity now as farmers going forwards to build that back up, that organic matter back up, but also to tailor our nutrients accordingly. RB209 is fundamentally a reference book. You know, it's the basis to what we do. So here I'm fax qualified. My agronomist is facts qualified, my farm manager is facts qualified. So there's a lot of chiefs, if you like. But sometimes it's good to be able to refer back and say, you know, strip out what we've known or what we've done in the past here and say, okay, let's go back to basics. What do we do? For example, where we've started growing oats a couple of years ago, I haven't grown oats before. My agronomist hasn't had a huge experience of oats. So you then start taking it back and going, okay, what do we do? And obviously there's been a review on oat nutrition too. But it's the basis where we can go back and start again, and you can open the book and go, right, okay, this is what RB209 says. And then going forward, we'll use our own experience to change that if we want to.
You were on the HDB board in 2015 when HDB announced it was taking on the production of RB209. Was this a key time for industry input and review of the bulletin?
Yeah, it was an opportunity. Nutrition's always been the thing I've been quite interested in anyway, but when I was on the board, when this came across the board and sort of it was given as an opportunity to us, we all felt collectively that it was a fantastic opportunity to take something in-house where we have farmer influence on it, because there's farm members on the board, there's industry members on the board as well. But it meant that it went back into some sort of control about what was done, the research that was done, the publications that were done. So it was generally a positive thing to take on and do it.
Were the break-even ratios something that you found useful?
Absolutely. The break-even ratios in RB29, when you're back against the wall with prices, is so important. The tricky bit is you're looking at futures prices for wheat and prices that you paid for fertiliser 6 or 8 months ago in some situations. And I think sat here today, we'd all have sold this year's crop last year if we'd known.
And, you know, launched in 1973, we're in 2023 now. Do you think it's going to last another 50 years?
Yeah, 1973 doesn't seem an awfully long time ago. It was before I was born, but not long before I was born. So, yeah, I'd like to think it is. I think it's something that's... it'd be interesting to... I haven't seen a copy of it from 1973, but it'd be interesting to see what principles are still in there, or what the technical work is still in there, and see if it's still relevant today. I think it probably will have changed, but that's the beauty of the book. It's updated and is changing and evolving.
That's James Price, a farmer from Oxfordshire, talking to our reporter Beatrice Waters about how he uses the Nutrient Management Guide. Let's go back to Dr. Amanda Bennett, AHDB's Senior Environment Manager. She's still with me, and it's good to have you on the Food and Farming Podcast. Thank you very much for sparing the time. Amanda, it must be heartening to hear someone putting what you create into practice.
Yes, absolutely, John. It's really important to have that person on the ground. We've spoken about RB209 as a reference book, and it is a starting point. But actually, that on the ground interpretation of the guidance is really important. Understanding the site, what the soils are like, the cropping history, and making those adjustments according to that particular farm business and that particular scenario really is important to have that facts qualified advisor there.
And I know that you really do value those facts qualified advisors and what they're doing, you know, out there in the field.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's important to retain that, the current understanding. So there are a number, nearly 4,000 FACTS qualified advisors already. They are taught and examined on the contents of RB209. But it's not just that. There is an annual assessment as well to retain that qualification. And Ian actually is involved in writing a lot of the content and the questions for that annual assessment.
I'm John Bates, joined by Dr. Amanda Bennett throughout this episode of AHDB's Food and Farming Podcast. Well, we may not have cracked open the champagne quite yet, Amanda, but we would have good reason to, because we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of the humble nutrient management guide known as RB209. So far, we've been trying to understand how RB209 has managed to stand the test of time, which also begs the question, how does it go forward beyond 2023? So just hold fire on the crystal glasses there. Amanda, get your crystal ball out. How does RB209 look going forward?
A very good question. So the technical content of RB209 is continually kept under review through our governance process with the Crop Nutrient Management Partnership and looking at the research going through those technical working groups. So we'll continue to do that. We're in a place at the moment where we can take a bit of a longer term view about ensuring that guidance meets the levy payer and industry needs as farming systems change and things develop in the future, looking at what the industry priorities are and how the guide is currently used or how it might be improved. So Ian mentioned earlier about the organic materials, for example, and in the very early editions, there was very little information on that. Whereas now we have an entire section dedicated to the use of organic materials. So really we're looking ahead to see what the industry needs are going forward. And as we go forward with that review process, obviously we'll be pleased to hear from anyone who would like to contribute their views.
Well, as we've got Ian Richards, Ian, I'd like to put that question to you then. So are there any developments or anything that you would like to see in the future?
Well, difficult to say what big changes might come a long time in the future, but for the short term, I think we've got a pretty good system going now. AHDB have got a nice review system going. It's much better than it used to be. In the old days, we used to have revisions to RB209 about every 10 years, eight, nine years, a major revision, a new document. It's moved now to a much more flexible system where we're updating it more or less as we go along, much more frequently, and it's much more attuned to current research findings. So I think that's the way to go, to keep up what we're doing now, avoid going back to a system where we had a new document every so many years, and keep a living document going, so people know that the information is current. That means it's difficult to do hard copies, but at the same time, if people are prepared to use PDFs and online versions, then that accessibility, I think, is a really good thing.
Great, Ian. Thank you very much indeed. Amanda, if I just come back to you, I probably haven't asked you the obvious question. What does RB stand for?
Well, Ian might be able to explain this as well, but in the very early editions, MAF, the predecessor of DEFRA, produced a number of reference bulletins on a range of different topics. And it so happened that the fertilizer recommendations was reference bulletin number 209. So it could have been any number in the series, but RB209, it got shortened to, and that has stuck ever since.
Reference bulletin. Right. Fantastic. Good. Okay. So for listeners who want a copy, how can they get a copy?
So if you wanted to have a hard copy, you can just contact the publications team at AHDB and request those to be sent out. Alternatively, copies are available to download as a PDF online on the RB209 web pages of AHDB.
And are there any other materials which AHDB produces that you would like listeners to be aware of?
Yes, I think the soils information is really complementary to nutrient management. We have a lot of resources around soil management and soil health in particular on our Great Soils website. And soil health brings together physics, chemistry, and biology. Obviously, the chemistry side of that, pH, nutrient balances in soil, all very central to that and are very important in nutrient management as well.
Okay, so there you go. I think it's safe to say we've uncovered how RB209 has managed to stand the test of time. And remember, you can download a free copy from the AHDB website, www.ahdb.org.uk. Thanks to Amanda Bennett, Ian Richards, and James Price for telling the story of the first 50 years of RB209. Stay safe, stay well. I'm John Bates. Thanks for listening.
If you have any comments about this podcast or have ideas for future episodes, please email foodandfarming@ahdb.org.uk.